Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Tony-nominated comedian Mario Cantone will appear at the Woodstock Comedy Festival on September 21st. Mario, who is best known for his role as Anthony on the hit HBO series Sex and the City, is also an accomplished stage actor and a singer. He has performed on Broadway in Shakespeare's The Tempest, Love, Valor, Compassion, Assassins, and his one-man show, Laugh Whore. Aside from his acting career, he has conquered the comedy scene, performing as a stand-up and impressionist in venues as prestigious as Carnegie Hall. He joins us now, Mario Cantone. Welcome back to the Roundtable.
Is it round? I can't see.
It's actually not. So now we've broken that illusion already.
I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay.
That's all right. It's okay. Square tables are very nice. Ovals are nice. I have a nice oval table. It's beautiful.
We're shape inclusive.
It's all shapes. That's right.
This is sort of a ham-fisted first question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. When did you first realize that you were funny?
I guess like in elementary school and junior high school, around that. I mean, I started doing kind of like stand-up in junior high school. There was a contest called the speech contest that we did. I guess if you could speak, you could win. And I would do like old Steve Allen material or I did a Gabe Kaplan monologue, I think. Oh, my God, I'm really dating myself. that's when I kind of first realized it, when I just kind of got up on stage and did it. I mean, I knew I was kind of funny around my family, but the proof is when you get up on stage. And when I was young, I just kind of, the first time I went third place in seventh grade. In eighth grade, I won third place. And then in ninth grade, I won first place. They finally gave me the first place. but yeah, that's fine. And then I went on to doing other talent shows and stuff in high school. But I didn't really start writing my own material till like my senior year in high school.
That's still pretty early.
Yeah, it's pretty early, I guess, yeah.
When you were doing other people's material, were you already doing impressions then too?
Yeah, I was. Because I was doing like Lily Tomlin's Ernest Dean or Lily Tomlin's Edith Ann. But you know what? There was one piece of material that I did write myself. And was one of the first impressions. And it was in seventh grade, I think. I did a sketch about Julia Child rolling a crepe Suzette. And I did, that was one of my first impressions, was Julia Child. So yeah, I did write that early on. But it was like a, within the character, it was like a little monologue. I didn't really start writing stand-up of me, like me talking about, you know, observational things with impressions thrown in till my senior year in high school. But I did write that. I forgot about that. And then it's so funny that when I got to college, Emerson College in Boston, I auditioned for this group that was the hot thing on campus back then, and it was headed up by Dennis Leary. It was called the Emerson Comedy Workshop, and it's very hard to get in, very hard to get tickets to the shows. It was the thing. And I got in my freshman year, and one of the first sketches I did was Julia Child rolling a joint and cleaning marijuana. So it graduated from a crepe Suzette to a joint in college, which is the way I think life goes.
Yeah, it tends to. Have you ever attempted an impression that you worked on but didn't feel it was good enough to ever put on stage? Somebody you wanted to do but couldn't quite capture?
No, because I won't do it. I'll know if I can do it or not.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if I know I can't do it, I'm not going to bring it up there. I've been doing it long enough, and I kind of hear it in my head to know that I can do it. Like, my cousin's always pushing me to do Liberace ever since this movie. And I do a ridiculous Liberace, and it's not that good. And I did it in Atlantic City, and like killed. People were laughing hysterically. And then I did it again somewhere else, and no one was really laughing. So I'm like, and inside I'm thinking, it's not that good. It's not that good of an impression. And I'm the jury's still out if I'm right or wrong. But that one's confusing me.
And how do you know when it is good? What are the
how do I know? Yeah. I don't know. I can hear it. I can hear it in my head. I don't know. I guess I can. And I'm, you know, and at this point especially, I'm old. If I don't know by now, stop. go crawl under the covers and stop doing this. Yeah, I can tell. And I think when I was younger, when you're younger, you just kind of have the balls to just go forward and do it, whether it's good or not. But you're always terrified. You know, I'm always afraid before I go on. It's terrifying. It's awful.
Even now you are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But you know what they say? I said it to Joy Behar, and she finished my sentence. I said to her, I said, the greats are always the most terrified. She said, yes, and the mediocre are always at their best. I'm like, isn't that the truth? But I'm terrified. But then, you know, after the hour and a half, 2 hours is over with me being on stage, it's usually pretty great, thank God. And I'm like, what were you afraid of? But I never look back at that. It's always a new show, and I'm always afraid. Probably because I don't do it as much as I should, too. I mean, I do it, you know, a couple times a month. If I did it, you know, every week, maybe I wouldn't be as afraid. That's just scary. People go, it's the hardest thing, it's the scariest thing. It doesn't feel like the hardest thing when I'm doing it, but it feels like the scariest thing before I go on. That's what it feels like.
Do you have a built-in audience when you perform once or twice a month now? Is it are fans of yours who come, or are you still booked into rooms where people might not be familiar with your work?
No, I'm pretty booked. You know, I just did Atlantic City, the mm-hmm. Golden Nugget, and that was like 1,200 people that came, and they come to see me. Yeah, I have a lot of fans, and they come. At this point, hopefully they're going to come, because if they don't, you better crawl under the covers and just stop, like I said. No, they come. You know, I'm not drawing 5,000 people, but, you know, I think drawing 1,200 to 1,600 people a show when you do a theater like that is respectable.
Absolutely.
It depends on the venue, too. I mean, sometimes they'll book me in a 500-seat venue, and that's fine. They come. But I'm also the kind of comedian where, if the tickets are on sale 2 months in advance, I'm not going to sell 2 months in advance. The last few weeks, I start selling a lot. And they come. So producers always panic, but that's always the way it goes with me. It's just the way it is. I'm not, you know, One Direction where they're going to sell out in 2 seconds. This is an old comedian that's been around a long time. And you know, people like me and love me, and they come. But they, you know, they're not, I don't feel like they're in a rush to get them. But, yeah, people do come to see me, thank God. And it's a very big mix of people. You know, it's a lot of women. A lot of straight couples, a few gay people, and a mix of a lot of Italians, Latinos, Black. It's a lot of ethnic uh-huh. people. It's a very mixed crowd. People are shocked. They think it's going to be an all gay crowd. It's like, surprise. It's not. Never was.
Did that surprise you at all, or no?
No, because it's just the way it has been my whole career.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of gay people don't go to stand-up clubs, even though I don't do clubs. I do theaters or casinos now. But like, I remember when I did San Francisco, I did the Castro Theater, and I was here. I am in the in the middle of gay ground zero, and I'm just like, they're not gonna come. This is gonna be awful. And it was like a 1,400 seat theater, I guess, and I sold about 600 seats, like. The day before I got there, there was about 600 seats sold. The producers were really upset. These promoters were not very nice about it and didn't really make you feel so great about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the day of, there were like another like 600 to 700 walk-ups. So I had like, 1,300 people in that room. And it was the best show I've ever had. And it was mostly a gay crowd. But there was still a lot of women there. There was still a mix. There's always that mix. But it was a lot more gay people than usual. And it was the... When they're forced to see me, because a lot of them had nothing to do that night, or I'm doing a benefit
mm-hmm.
for Broadway Cares or Equity Fight Saves or something like that. When
right.
they're forced to see what I do, it's usually the greatest audience in the world. But they just don't come. It's handfuls of them here and there that will just show up. It's not the majority of my audience, which, you know, there's nothing I can do about it at this point, but it does sadden me. But I also look at what gay people like. They like women. They like Lady Gaga. They like Margaret Cho. They like Kathy Griffin. And I do, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, although I love male singers more than anything, though, to tell you the truth. I don't know when that happened, but it happened about 10 years ago. All of a sudden, I was into the male vocalists, because usually the cliche is you just sit around and listen to Judy Garland all the time. And sometimes Liza... that's true for me too. But I love like John Legend and Maxwell and Eric Benet and Mark Broussard and Frank Sinatra. And I prefer the men. But it's it's an interesting thing, but and it's so funny for comedians. For me, I mean, I love Lily Tomlin, and today, you know, I love my friends too. I love Joy Behar, I love Susie Essman, I love Kathy Griffin, and Margaret Cho. So I do like the women too, but yet I love Artie Lang, who's brilliant and mm-hmm. has mostly a very rowdy, straight audience, but he's brilliant. You know, I love Colin Quinn. I guess I'd like a mix of things. But I do find that for the majority of gay people, it's they do prefer the women, female entertainers. And I think it's been that way through history. And they, you know, they have really good taste. They used to, anyway. Now they're all kids. The kids, I don't know, the gay kids don't have very good taste, I don't think. But, you know, as I get older, I'm like, what are they listening to? And then I watch these award shows, and I'm like, who is that?
Yeah.
Who is she? I don't even know who that is. And the rappers and the, I don't know who anybody is anymore. It's awful.
Well, that's what happens.
It is what happens. It is.
You perform stand-up as your, you know, as a version of yourself, your stand-up comedian self.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you're an actor, too, where you portray different characters. Is the terror you mentioned, the pre-performance stage fright, the same if you are going on as yourself or going on in character?
Well, when you're in front of the camera, if it's in front of the camera, no, it's not as terrifying. You get nervous the day you have to work a little bit, but it's not like that horrible terror you feel in your stomach and in your head. If I'm going on stage in character in a Broadway show in a play.
Right, like Assassins.
Love Valor, I had, you know, I replaced Nathan Lane and I had 10 days to do it, and that was a 3-hour play, and it was basically the engine of that play.
Yeah.
And I was terrified. But, you know, I did it. But the thing with that is, yes, you're terrified that first few days, that first week, but then you're doing it every night. So then you're not terrified. It's mm-hmm. over. You know, when I was doing Laugh Horror on Broadway, which was my show, yes, I was terrified those first few weeks, and then you're doing a run, so you know you're fine. You know you're going to go out there, and it's going to pretty much be fine, hopefully. Although I did have a few nights. I'll never forget the day after Thanksgiving. It was like, talk about the trichinosis kicking into that audience. It was like, where are you?
Oh, it was unbelievable.
Oh, my God. It was not. It took them a long time to come along. It was that one day. I'll never forget it. But the rest of the run was great. Yeah, once you're doing a run, it's fine. It's, I guess, because I don't do it a lot that, you know. And clubs really scare me. I don't like them.
Why not?
I don't like them at all. I just hate them. I do one. I do Gotham,
mm-hmm.
which I'm gonna do Gotham Comedy in New York on West 23rd Street. I do that once every 6 months just to kind of work up material. It's like my workshop, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's and I'm going to do it September 27th, 28th, and 29th. So I'm there in a few weeks. And then I got the Woodstock Comedy Festival, which is going to be a blast, too. Every time I hear Woodstock, I just feel like everyone's going to be taking LSD and smoking pot and, you know, doing mescaline and THC and all the old school drugs. And we're going to get up and be funny.
I think it'll work.
No, I don't think so. I could never. Oh, my God. I've never done it. Never got on stage high. I couldn't do it. I don't understand how people do it. Well, cocaine, I never did. Hated it. I don't understand. I was too hyper for it.
Mm-hmm.
But marijuana, I don't know how anybody smokes marijuana and gets up on stage. Even the marijuana that I used to smoke when I was a kid, when it had seeds and twigs and it didn't blow your head off
yeah.
the way it does today, I don't know how. I don't understand that anymore. I don't know what they're doing to it. I don't know how people smoke it. Can't do it. I mean, I know I'm old, but the stuff is like nuclear now. It's ridiculous. It's got a few times that I've smoked pot, the new stuff, that's all I think of is I'm going to die someday. That's all I think of.
Oh, no.
Terrifying.
Yeah, not a thought you want to have on stage, certainly.
No, not a thought. Yeah, that too. Well, that happens anyway before I go on stage. I'm going to die up there. I'm going to die on stage. But anyway, Woodstock and drugs, it just, you know, I the thoughts go together.
Yes. We're just about out of time, but I did want to ask you before I let you go about Miss America 2014. You were announced as a judge, along with former NSYNC member Lance Bass and classic violinist Joshua Bell.
I love Joshua Bell, too. I know. How about that? And two gay guys on the panel. That's very progressive for Mr. Trump. I think that's fantastic. You know, it's going to be fun. I have no idea what I'm in for. but I thought it would be fun. And it's a classic thing. Mm-hmm. I begged them to let me sing the Miss America song. Begged them.
You did.
But they said, they were like, we don't sing that anymore. I'm like, oh, why? Since Burt Parks was let go years ago, they don't sing Here She Comes Miss America anymore. But the lyric, the Atlantic City, it's going to be in Atlantic City for the first time in 6 years.
Uh-huh.
But there's a whole lyric about Atlantic City in it. I said, you have to sing it because you're bringing it back to Atlantic City. Let me sing the song. No. I was like, all right, then at least let Lance Bass dance to it. And we're at the lovely Borgata, which I love that hotel, so this is going to be fun. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
And on the 21st of this month, you will be at the lovely Bearsville Theater in Woodstock, New York, participating in the Woodstock Comedy Festival. Mario, thank you so much for joining us, and have a great
time. Thank you, Julian. Thanks, honey. Thank you so much.
Mario Cantone will perform as part of the Woodstock Comedy Festival this Saturday at the Bearsville Theater. To learn more, visit woodstockcomedyfestival.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.